நீங்கள் SBS தமிழோடு இணைந்துள்ளீர்கள்.
Congratulations, Shankari Chandran, Miles Franklin Award. The annual literary award awarded to a novel which is of the highest literary merit and presents Australian life in any of its faces.
Thank you, Sanjay. I'm absolutely delighted to win, and also still in a state of disbelief, to be honest.
Yeah, so I was going to ask, what did you feel when you were told?
When the chair of the panel, Richard Neville, called me to tell me, I actually had to ask him some 3-4 times to repeat himself because I just couldn't understand what he was saying to me. So I was very, very shocked.
Miles Franklin Award, which started in 1957, was first given to Patrick White, and you are the recent recipient. So how does it feel to be in that same category?
Absolutely extraordinary. I feel so lucky and so honored to be on the same list. And I don't think I can bring myself to say that I'm in the same category as Patrick White, Peter Carey, Michelle de Kretzer, you know, these authors who I have loved and admired, but certainly on the same list as them. I feel incredibly honored.
We have interviewed you on your first book, Song of the Sun God, and the recent book, Chai Times at Cinnamon Gardens, which got the award for you. What are your future plans? What are you going to do with the winnings and also with your time that you have now?
Well, with the Miles Franklin Award, you know, Miles Franklin intended for Australian authors to be given the opportunity through the award to write more. And that incredibly generous endowment has been managed by Perpetual and grown over the years. And those of us that receive it, I think, absolutely want to do what Miles Franklin intended us to do, which is to write more. And so I hope next week when things are a little quieter to sit down and have a think about how I can rearrange my life to write more.
With the referendum for Voice to Parliament coming up and your latest book handling issues related to Australia and First Australians, can we expect something along that line?
The novel is set in far west New South Wales, and it is about the strength and courage of a particular community and the way that they rise up and protect one of their own. So that's all I'm going to tell you about the future project. But certainly Chai Time at Cinnamon Gardens speaks to the origins story or the formation of Sri Lanka. And importantly for me, because this is my chosen home, Australia, it speaks to the formation and the foundation of the modern nation state of Australia and the ways in which mythology and history manipulated in order to tell a particular kind of story about who's allowed to be here and who's not. And I certainly hope in the future that when we come to vote in the referendum, that the Australians embrace that vote with courage and listen to what First Nations people are asking for and give them the recognition that they so rightly deserve.
Well put. Thank you very much, Shankari Chandran, and congratulations again. Hope to talk to you soon.
Thank you so much. It's always a pleasure to talk to you and to listen to SBS Radio.
The following is an interview recorded in March 2022 when I spoke to Shankari about the award-winning book, Chai Times at Cinnamon Gardens. Greetings. Vanakkam, Shankari Chandran.
Vanakkam, Sanjayan. Thank you very much for having me.
We have spoken to you, Shankari, after your first book, Song of the Sun God, was published. And you have published your third book now, Chai Time at Cinnamon Gardens. For me, it has four themes woven in an intelligent and intriguing way. But tell us, in your words, what is Chai Time at Cinnamon Gardens all about?
Chai Time at Cinnamon Gardens, for me, is a love story set in a nursing home. It follows the lives of the residents and the staff at this nursing home called Cinnamon Gardens in a fictional suburb in Western Sydney. It's set against the rising racism of contemporary Australia, but it flashes back to the lives of the elderly residents decades before in their ancestral homeland of Sri Lanka during the country's civil war. The novel is about the stories the residents and staff tell themselves and each other to keep their memories and culture alive. It celebrates the way we build communities in our new homelands and hold on to the old ones. If my first novel was my love letter to my ancestral homeland, then this novel is my love letter to Australia.
Through one of your characters in the book, you say, "Stories we share are the temples we build," and you have built three temples so far. How has this temple been received by the wider audience?
This temple has been really warmly received, Sanjayan. It's been wonderful for me to see the way in which readers of diverse cultural backgrounds, Australians of many different ancestries, reading it and engaging with its themes – being prepared to think about some of the questions that the novel poses and to read it and receive it in the spirit in which it's intended. It's intended to be an honest exploration of race and the way that history is used to frame cultural and political narratives. And readers have really engaged with that in a way that's curious and respectful and loving, actually. It's been great.
Again, through one of your characters, you say, possession of land is 9/10 of the law, possession of history is 9/10 of the future. As I mentioned earlier, there are four themes that you have interwoven in this book nicely. One is racism in Australia. What's the future of racism or racist behaviour in Australia?
I think that my children's generation is getting better and is much more comfortable at calling out racism. Racism is racism, right? And the only way that you can create cultural change is by being open and honest about it and trying to not stand for it, to not enable it, to not normalise it. And I think for my generation, perhaps I'll just only speak for myself, throughout my life, I spent a lot of time seeing the racism around me, both that kind of interpersonal racism and the systemic racism of this country, and not knowing how to speak out about it and not feeling comfortable to speak out about it. And if anything, feeling that as a migrant, I needed to accept and just be grateful for the fact that we had been allowed to come here, we had been given refuge, and we'd had the opportunity to build a wonderful life. I think for my children's generation, we'll be much better advocates from a younger age of simply calling out what they see and not standing for it, not allowing it to happen. And they will have those conversations much earlier in their lives and much more honestly and openly in their lives.
One of the major characters in the book, Maya, of course, she belongs to the previous generation, but she had to hide her true identity and take the identity of Sarah Burns to become a successful writer. Did you, Shankari Chandran, face that kind of prejudice when you started your writing career?
Yeah. Absolutely, I think so. And I sort of describe Maya as a better version of myself in 40 years' time. And it could be no secret or surprise that some of the things that she has gone through and talks about in her literary career are drawn from my own experience. For example, when I wrote my first novel, Song of the Sun God, in 2013-2014, I was told that it was a good book, but that it would not be able to find a market here in Australia, that it wasn't Australian enough, and that Australian publishers wouldn't be able to sell it into the Australian market. I found that really difficult to accept and to bear because I'm Australian, and I think that Australian stories are simply those written by Australians, and therefore if I'm Australian, this is an Australian story. And I write about colonization, about dispossession, about forced migration and the creation of home. So to me, that is a very big part of the Australian story and the multiplicity of Australian stories. And then later on, when I wrote The Barrier, my second novel, at the end of writing the first draft, I went back to the novel, the manuscript, and I deliberately changed the color and the race, the religion and the name of my protagonist, who at the time was called Zakir Ali, a name that I then got to use later in Chai Time at Cinnamon Gardens. But I changed him from being a South Asian protagonist to being a white protagonist because I felt that that would get me over the line with Australian publishers. And at that point in my career, I was really keen, yearning to be published in Australia, in the sort of country that I had chosen as my home. And then by the time I then came round to Chai Time at Cinnamon Gardens, I had really gone on a journey with my artistic practice and had got to the stage where I kind of didn't care anymore, in the sense that I felt that it was more important that I be true to myself and more important that I be true to my stories and my mode of storytelling, and that what would happen after that. And the result of that is, of course, Chai Time at Cinnamon Gardens.
I know it's like asking a mother to name her most favourite child, but in this book, Chai Time at Cinnamon Gardens, who would you say is your most favourite character or person?
That is indeed a very difficult question. I do think Maya is probably my favourite character because she says the things I want to say and she's brave. She lives her life. Although she writes in secret, she still writes and she still has the career. It's not entirely the career that she wanted, but it is a successful career that enables her to support her family. And she does so, whilst it is in secret, she still does so very unapologetically. She moves through the world with courage and without apology. And so I think Maya is my favourite character. I did love Dr. Sri Skandaraja, Maya's father, because through him that we get to explore one of the themes of the book, which is the way in which historical and cultural narratives are appropriated and the way in which that controlling of history and the crafting, the recrafting, the rewriting of history is committed, is perpetuated in order to, in fact, indeed exploited in both Australia and in Sri Lanka, in order to create a particular narrative about the origins or the formation and the foundation of a nation. And in turn, that story about the foundation of a nation decides and controls who owns that nation and who has the right to be there, and perhaps more importantly, who does not have the right to be there. And Dr. Sri Skandaraja, who is named very lovingly after my uncle in New York, from whom I have learnt so much of Tamil history and Tamil politics, it's through that particular character, the archaeologist, that we are able to explore that particular theme.
This is SBS Tamil, broadcasting in Tamil throughout Australia. Our guest today is Shankari Chandran, a lawyer working in the social justice field, a mother, and the author of three novels, including Chai Times at Cinnamon Gardens. You were not born in Sri Lanka. You were born in the UK and you grew up in Canberra. Yet you were able to bring out the nuances of the politics in the island of Sri Lanka and bring out salient features of the conflict there. You have narrated the story so well that people who are not familiar with the conflict or the history of the island of Sri Lanka also can understand what had happened to the people. How were you able to do that? What was your strategy? How did you go about creating all the scenarios?
Yeah, that's a good question. When I wrote this novel, in fact, all of my novels begin really as something that I'm writing for my children. And then I find myself sort of expanding that circle of audience and have a greater sense that I'm writing for my community. And then as I get further into the novel, I feel a sense of wanting or a yearning to write for a much wider audience and wanting to communicate some of the things that have happened to the Tamil people, to people that are not Tamil, so to people that don't know. And in some ways, sometimes people that don't care but should care. And so when I wrote Song of the Sun God, I did an enormous amount of research. And it was very important to me that I was as accurate as I could possibly be. I'm not an academic, but I have a legal background and I have trained for years and research, and the integrity, the veracity and accuracy of what you write is very important to my professional trade. And so I really held myself and succeeded, hopefully, to that particular standard. I did that because in that novel, I really wanted to interrogate our past and our history and that genocide that took place at the end. In fact, all the genocides that took place along the way, but that genocide that took place at the very end, which also comes up in Chai Time at Cinnamon Gardens. And I did not want anyone to point to something, to a mistake, a historical mistake that I had made, a mistake of fact that I had made somewhere, and say, well, if you're wrong here, then you must, you know, you're also wrong in other places. And I didn't want one error to allow someone to undermine the veracity and the integrity of everything else that I had written. And so I really pushed myself to get it right to the best of my ability. And that novel provided the foundation for all of my subsequent work, because that novel, as you will remember, it is so big and so sweeping. It's 7 decades, it's 3 to 4 generations, it's 3 continents. And therefore, when I came to writing Chai Time at Cinnamon Gardens, I did not have to do a huge amount more of research, because that research was still very fresh in my mind. And in fact, it's research that I've grown up with my whole life, because some parts of my family are very political. They're very historically and politically and culturally aware. And they're also very good storytellers and have always wanted to share those stories with me, as well as wanting to share that history and politics with me. And so I didn't need to do too much more when I came to writing Chaitanya Cinnamon Gardens, because it was still there. And the critical point in history of Chaitanya Cinnamon Gardens is the burning of the Jaffna Library. And that, I think, for many Tamils, even for those of us who have been born and raised outside of Sri Lanka, it's a really important and profound act of cultural erasure. It's a really brutal and overt act of the beginning of genocide. And so when I studied that years ago, that has always stayed with me. And I knew that I wanted to write something built around that particular moment in time. I had to go on to do a lot of research, a lot more research about race and the construction of race, because this novel is very openly about race. I hope that it delivers that in a subtle and nuanced manner, but it is still a novel about race. And there are many novels that have done that so beautifully, and there are many academic texts that have explored that so eloquently. And I felt that if I wanted to even reach for the canon on race, why dream small when you can dream big? If I was going to reach for the canon on race, then I really needed to know and think and read and research and challenge my language and my articulation of those issues. And so that was where I spent a lot more of my research time on this particular novel.
Talking about racism, there are many statues erected for Captain Cook, yet there's only one for Pemulwuy, an Aboriginal leader who had fought against the British. In the second half of your book, the focal point turns to the residents of the nursing home tearing down a statue of Captain Cook from its mounds. I thought that was a brilliant idea to have brought that in, because that narrative polarizes people even today. People are still talking about Australia Day, whether it should be the 27th of January, and the place Captain Cook has in the textbooks, etc. I am just curious to find out the eureka moment for you to bring that into the story and weaving it beautifully.
I needed an inciting incident. Yeah, so it's a technical term for something that sets off the action in a novel. And I knew that I needed an inciting incident related to race. And I had toyed with a few different ideas. And one of them was the idea of potentially, you know, I didn't want it to be something that the nursing home residents did with malice. And so I had toyed with a few different things, but I kept coming back to Captain Cook. And very shortly after I had written the scene, there's a scene where the husband and wife, where the antagonist essentially is rebuffed by his wife. And that particular rejection from this woman that he loves sets him on his own path of destruction. And I'd written that scene and needed to recover from it, because the first version of that scene was actually a lot more violent than the version that's in the novel. And so I needed to step back from that for a little bit. And then almost immediately afterwards, after I wrote that, George Floyd was murdered, and the Black Lives Matter movement really escalated in the US and also in Australia. And statues started to be torn down. It's such powerful imagery and such a profound statement of civic disobedience, civic refusal and resistance. And I was just so absorbed in it. And I thought, that's it. That is what's going to happen. And it won't be done with malice. It will actually be done for all the right reasons. It will be done because this community in the nursing home, led by this archaeologist who's traumatized but trying to find his own way back to health and stability, who sees in the statue the representation of everything that's wrong when power takes control of history and rewrites it to exclude some and include others. And I just knew that I had my moment. I knew I had my inciting incident. And I really, this is going to sound awful, but I really enjoyed writing that scene. And again, I don't mean that maliciously. I don't mean any disrespect to the value or the place that Cook has in this country's complex and savage and profound history. I mean that when I wrote it, I had to ask myself, how would a group of elderly people bring down a bronze statue of this historical Goliath? How would you do it? And I was YouTubing chemistry experiments and studying things that made metal melt, chemical compounds, and how many ropes would you need and how many men would you need and what's torque and what's leverage. So it was a very educational experience for me trying to work that out. So if anybody needs to know how to take down a statue, I'm your girl.
That's why I wanted to congratulate you, Shankari, because it was very beautifully done.
Thank you. Thank you, Sanjin.
What's next for Sarah Burns?
I think Sarah Burns will, emboldened and empowered by what has happened to her, she will go on to not necessarily reveal that Sarah is in fact Maya, but Maya will write her own stories in her own voice and in her own way.
And what's next for Shankari Chandran?
Shankari Chandran is working hard at her next novel whilst trying to meet the needs of her four wonderful children, who are incredibly forgiving of her parental failures, and holding down a full-time job as the head of sustainability for a surprisingly large company.
Thank you very much, Shankari Chandran, for your time and your insight. On behalf of SBS Tamil, we wish you all the very best in all your future endeavours.
Thank you, Sanjin. It's always a pleasure to be here with SBS and you.
இது போன்ற மேலும் பல நிகழ்ச்சிகளை கேட்க வேண்டுமா? Apple Podcast, Google Podcast, Spotify என்று பாட்காஸ்ட் கிடைக்கும் பல வழிகளில் நீங்கள் நிகழ்ச்சிகளை கேட்கலாம்.